A happy first day of Unleavened Bread. So between what Aaron covered and Sarah covered and Haven covered, it might be tricky to deliver a message today, except I'm not going to talk about that exactly. It's a Tuesday afternoon, and everyone's here for church. So I'm making some assumptions that you know today is special. You know today is different. And there are a lot of topics and conversations about calendars and moons, and I'm not downplaying the importance of those things, but they're really not the most important thing. They're not what we're supposed to focus on. They don't bring people to Christ. Like, you think if we had some new believers in here, those topics win everyone over? Do they even help you grow spiritually? I might not be popular after this message. I'm going to start in Matthew 16. In Matthew 16, verse 1, it says, "The Pharisees and Sadducees came to Jesus and tested him by asking him to show them a sign from heaven. He replied, 'When evening comes, you say, it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, today, it will be stormy, for the sky is red and overcast.' You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky." We're talking about that today. "But you cannot interpret the signs of the time. A wicked and adulterous generation looks for a sign, but none will be given except the sign of Jonah." Jesus then left them and went away. That's interesting, about people asking for signs of times to look and see the Messiah in it, to validate what they believe. "When they went across the lake," I'm in verse 5, "the disciples forgot to take bread. 'Be careful,' Jesus said to them. 'Be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees.' They discussed this among themselves and said, 'Is it because we didn't bring any bread?' Aware of their discussion, Jesus asked, 'You of little faith, why are you talking among yourselves about having no bread? Do you still not understand? Don't you remember the 5 loaves for the 5,000 and how many basketfuls you gathered? Or the 7 loaves for the 4,000 and how many baskets you gathered? How is it you don't understand that I was not talking to you about bread?'" But be on your guard against the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Then they understood he was not telling them to guard against yeast used in bread, but against the teaching of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Now, Jesus talked about the Pharisees and Sadducees a lot. When he talks about their teachings, he's usually talking about hypocrisy, spiritual pride, like we talked about in the Bible lesson today, and self-righteousness. Before we dive into that, let's look at the parallel account of that particular passage in Mark 8, 14 to 18, and then we'll get back to Matthew. In Mark 8, starting in verse 14, it said the disciples had forgotten to bring bread, except for 1 loaf they had with them in the boat. "Be careful," Jesus warned them. "Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod." This is a little bit different. They discussed this with one another and said, "Is it because we have no bread?" Aware of their discussion, Jesus asked them, "Why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see and ears but fail to hear? Do you not remember?" The title of my message today is Jesus, the Bread of Life. And I think today and this time of year is the perfect time to talk about that. Because we focus on a lot of things. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't be educated in those things. For instance, a male lamb, 1 year old, without spot or blemish, to be kept in your house. You take it at the 10th, you keep it till the 14th. Or the number of sacrifices, because they do mean things. You should know Leviticus 23, 4 to 14, talks about today and Passover and how we're supposed to keep it. That's good to know. That's good to do. But that is not the focus. And we spent so much time and energy and blogs and debates and arguments and splits over the thing that won't get one person through that door to salvation. So I'm going to talk about that, but I'm not going to talk about that today. Because in the context, and I'm in the text, he's talking about yeast, but he's telling you what yeast is. And that yeast is still in the church. Self-righteousness, pride, said, "Beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod." Okay, Herod has been long dead, but we have President Trump, we have President Biden, and depending on your perspective, people bring that into the church. Yeast. So back to Matthew, where we started. In verse 13, I went to Mark to get the parallel account. It says, "Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, and he asked his disciples, 'Who do people say the Son of Man is?'" Remember, this is in the context. He's talking about the leaven of the Pharisees. He's talking about the yeast. And they replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. But what about you?" he asked. "Who do you say I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, Son of the living God." Jesus replied, "Blessed you are, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by flesh and blood, but by my Father in heaven. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church." Now what he meant was, he's saying the rock he's going to build his church on is what Peter had confessed, that Jesus Christ is the Messiah, the Son of the living God. What are we building our church on? Because if that's not the rock, then your church is not on sound footing. It doesn't matter if you have the days right if you are not building it on that rock. Now, I'm a believer. I believe that God sent the days, but I believe he's the Lord of the days. You heard my daughter. We teach her. I teach all my children, just like my parents taught me. So I'm not dismissing that. But that's not our rock. That's not what the church is built on. And when your churches aren't built on the rock, they don't grow because they don't have the right foundation to stand on. So he says, I tell you, Peter, on this rock, that knowledge that we talked about, he said, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. That's the rock. So that there's no confusion on what the rock is. And he says, I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loose in heaven. Let me tell you something. That's a promise that our Messiah, Yeshua, made to us. I would be much more happy to debate with anyone how we bring that to reality, because I know it's possible because he said it. You know, the faith of a child. God said it. I believe it. Right? So I do. And it said, from that time, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem, suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed on the third day and be raised to life. Now remember the context? This is still in the context of leaven. And him being the Messiah and what he's going to build his church on. And he's telling them that. But then in verse 22, Peter, who we just know, God is giving Peter truth. Right? Yeshua just said, God revealed that to you. But in verse 22, Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Never, Lord, this shall never happen to you. Jesus turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. You see how quick that happened? Like, we are in the same text. They're having conversations. Peter has revelation. 1 minute saying, you are the Messiah. And that, as Jesus tells him, what he needs to do to build the church, how he needs to build that church on Christ, and the foundation is his death, burial, and resurrection. I'm in the text. I'm not out of context. And Peter says, well, no, you can't die. And Jesus, and I think Jesus knows who's motivating you, right? That's a fair assessment. He looks to him and says, basically, you're the devil. Now, how did that happen so quickly? From him confessing Jesus to being used by Satan to derail the mission. Well, that's why we have these days. Because, see, we seek Jesus, we want to seek him in our image. We want salvation the way we want salvation. We want to build a church, but we don't want to build it on Jesus. We want to be unique. Well, you know what? I have this truth over here that nobody else has. I figured out the right days. Can I tell you something about the calendar? Because I have studied it. And guess what I came up with? No matter which calendar you choose, you're going to rely on some scholar or some man to say, this is the way they did it, or this is really how they did it. Pray about it, and if the Spirit convicts you to do it one way, I'm not judging you. I'm glad you're observant. But it's not an issue of pride. Because it's a stumbling block. Now tell me, if you've observed or you've been around the church, It's not a stumbling block. Oh, you guys keep Hillel too, so you don't know what you're talking about. You're with this rabbi, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, you know, I've gone to those churches and I've sat while they argue when the year starts. Well, this equinox and that equinox. Okay. You know what we're not talking about? Jesus! Being the foundation. And here, Peter, who knows who Jesus is, and Jesus just gave him the mission and told him how he's going to build a church, he becomes a stumbling block when he lets his humanity try to derail the mission. So he says, "Get behind me, Satan. You're a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns." Peter's in the church. He's talking to Jesus. They're talking about building a church, and that's still the case. Beware of the leaven of the scribes, the Pharisees, of Herod. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny himself, take up their cross, and follow me. Ooh, Jesus, the bread of life. In John 6, 25 to 42, Jesus was preaching all day, and he is going to get on a boat and get to the other side of the lake. I think this is where he walks on water and he goes to the other side of the lake. Again, we will see this. In verse 25, it said, "When they found him on the other side of the lake, they asked him, 'Rabbi, when did you get here?' Jesus answered, 'Very truly, I tell you, you are looking for me, not because you saw the signs I performed, but because you ate loaves and had your fill. Do not work for food that spoils, but food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. For on him, God the Father has placed his seal of approval.' They asked him, 'What must we do to do the work God requires?' Jesus answered, 'The work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent.'" I'm going to pause there. Sometimes we complicate that. He just told them. So then they asked him, "What sign will you give that we may see it and believe you?" Again, the Pharisee asked for a sign before, right? What sign is it that you're really keeping the right day? I read this manual over here, or this person said that. What will you do? So they questioned him. They said, "Our ancestors ate manna in the wilderness. As it is written, he gave them bread to eat." Jesus said to them, "Very truly I tell you, it is not Moses who has given you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who has given you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." "Sir," they said, "always give us this bread." Then Jesus declared, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. But as I told you, you have seen me, and still you do not believe." When we drop down, it says in verse 48, "For I've come down from heaven, not to do my will, but the will of him who sent me. And this is the will of him who sent me, that I shall lose none of those he has given to me, but raise them up in the last day. For my Father's will is that everyone who looks to the Son and believes in him shall have eternal life, and I will raise them up at the last day. Wow. Is that in the Bible? Verse 41, it says, at this, the Jews began to grumble. I think Christians grumble at this too. Because he said, I am the bread that came down from heaven. They said, is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How can we say, I came down from heaven? So they had their issues with what he's saying, and I think some of us have our issues with what he's saying. But I'll tell you something that he has said, and we don't listen. When we major in the minors. In Isaiah 58, he talks about true fasting. And what does he say? He says it's how you treat people. He said, that's the kind of fast I desire. I desire a fast where you change how you do business. How about this? In Hosea 6:6, he says, I desire mercy, not sacrifice. Okay? How about Micah 5:8? He says, he wants you to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. So he is, in the Old Testament, preaching through these prophets over and over and over and over, and he's telling you what the mission is. Do we spend time talking about how we can do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with thy God? How we can do that better? Because I don't hear that. I don't, maybe it's just me. Do we talk about true fasting, how we could loosen the bonds of affliction, how we can change ourselves and make an impact in this world? Do we talk about Hosea? Do we talk about Hosea 6:6? So that's human nature. It's how we roll in the church, and it's not new. In 1 Corinthians 5, Paul had to talk to the Corinthian church, the church in Corinth, about how they did things, because he told them, purge out the old leaven. Be a new lump like you truly are, because Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us. Get it? That's the mission. Christ is sacrificed for us. So keep the feast unleavened, not with malice, but with sincerity and truth. So Paul is backing up everything that Isaiah, Hosea, and Micah told us. See, that's the thing with the church. We got caught up in everything but Christ. We get caught up in everything but Christ. How does that happen? You know, 2 Corinthians, same church, he's talking to them. He had to talk to them about how to keep the Lord's Supper because they were out of order. He had to talk to them about unleavened bread because they were out of order. They were just an out of order church. Extremely talented, but out of order. Gifted, but out of order. So in 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 1, he's going to talk to them a little more. He says, I hope you put up with me in a little foolishness. Yes, please put up with me. I am jealous for you with a godly jealousy. I promise you to one husband, to Christ, so that I may present you as a pure virgin to him. But I am afraid, just as Eve was deceived by the serpent's cunning minds and somehow be led astray, your minds may be somehow be led astray from sincere and pure devotion to Christ. If someone comes to you and preaches a Jesus other than the Jesus we preached, or if you receive a different spirit than you have received, or you receive a different gospel from the one you have accepted, you easily put up with it. What? So you mean, wait. Is he saying someone can preach Jesus and it not be Jesus? I think that's what he's saying. I've heard preachers preach Jesus and it's not Jesus. And I'm not talking about churches that meet on a different day. I've seen people seek the truth so much that the truth becomes your God. And you say, well, wait a minute. Aren't we supposed to be, just because something is a fact doesn't make it truth. And I'll let you think about that. There's an agenda when something is done without context. So you can preach a different Jesus. Really? Okay, let's drop down to verse 13. It says, "For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, masquerading as apostles of Christ. And for no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light." Is it not surprising then if his servants also masquerade as servants of righteousness? Wow. So that's one part of the deception we have to deal with, that when we listen and we look at all of these things, we don't lose sight of Jesus Christ. And I think historically, just in the Church of God movement, I think sometimes we lose sight of that. Maybe a lot of times we lose sight of that, right? Because we want to be so different from everyone else. But let me tell you something. Just because somebody over there might do 10 things you disagree with and they're doing one thing right, you don't have to give up that right thing just because you want to be different. Garner Ted Armstrong said, no matter what you feel about him, he said, "The church is ashamed of Jesus." He said that in the 60s or the 70s. I don't remember, sorry. But he did say it, and guess what? I think the church still is. Because that's the first. If there's any gospel that's preaching anything that's more important or anything that comes first, more than Jesus, then that's a different Jesus. He comes first. He's the way in. The Father put him there, and he's your Passover lamb. Right? That's the blood that's going to save you. Nothing else. Nothing else. The scribes, the Pharisees, they had the truth. They had the truth. Jesus even said, yeah, they have the truth. He said, listen to them, but don't do what they do. So they had the truth. They had the knowledge. And are we looking for more knowledge or are we looking for more Jesus? I would say get both, but guess what? Give me Jesus first. Jeremiah 17, verse 9. So the first problem we have is all the deception out there, the things that feed into the leaven of the Pharisees that we have. But then we have the second problem. I think this was Peter's issue. I think it's our issue as well. Jeremiah 17, verse 9 says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" Why do I want to focus on Jesus? Because I will tell you something. We cannot see the sin in ourselves sometimes. Our mind tricks ourselves. You know that leaven, that pride, that ego that we heard about? We all have one. And we can go on and on and on and on, and we don't see our mistakes. That's why it's about Jesus, because guess what? His blood covers what you don't even see. I'm going to tell on myself. I have done some horrible, horrible, horrible things. And sometimes it's not even years after the fact that I realize, whoa. But maybe it's just me. But I'll tell you what, that's okay. I'll take all the Jesus I need it. How does that work in real life? How does that work in real life? Because sometimes we see things, right? And we're outraged because we're good people. We see things, we're good people. I'm being sarcastic. But we're outraged when we see crimes and injustice, right? Because we like to think we're good people. And when we see people doing wrong to other people, we say things like, surely as the Lord lives, the man who did this must die, or bring her out and let's burn her to death. Right when we get outraged at somebody doing something wrong. And let's read those stories so we see how it works. Genesis 38, 23. Let's look at our righteous indignation, good God-fearing people. So Judah had kids, and he married them off to Tamar. The first one died. He promised she married the second one. He died. Well, God killed him because he was evil. I'm just summarizing it. And Judah said, you know what? He had one other kid. He said, you know what? Hold up. I want you to wait. And when he grows up, you can marry him. But Judah wasn't serious about that. So in verse 23, Judah's wife had died, and Judah went off into a town. And he left a present. So in verse 23, it says, then Judah said, let her keep what she has, or we will become a laughingstock. He paid his newfound friend for her services. After all, I did send her this young goat, but didn't find her. About 3 months later, Judah was told, your daughter-in-law, Tamar, is guilty of prostitution. And as a result, she is now pregnant. Judah said, bring her out and have her burned to death. Because he was outraged. This is awful. She sinned. As she was being brought out, she sent a message to her father-in-law. I'm pregnant by the man who owns these, she said. And she added, see if you recognize whose seal and cord and staff these are. They belong to Judah. Judah recognized them and said, she is more righteous than I. She was. Since I wouldn't give her my son, Selah. Second Samuel 12, 1 to 13. The Lord sent Nathan to David. When he came to him, he said, there were two men in a certain town, one rich, the other poor. The rich man had a very large number of sheep and cattle, but the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb he had bought. He raised it, and he grew it up with him and his children. It shared his food and drank his cup and even slept in his arms. It was like a daughter to him. Now a traveler came to the rich man, but the rich man refrained from taking one of his own sheep or cattle to prepare for the traveler who had come to him. Instead, he took the ewe lamb that belonged to the poor man and prepared it for the one who had come to him. David burned with anger against the man and said to Nathan, as surely as the Lord lives, the man who did this must die. He must pay for the lamb four times over because he did such a thing and had no pity. Then Nathan said to David, you are the man. Wow. Do you see how that works? And can I tell you something? I don't think Judah or David are alone in the blindness to their own flaws, in their blindness to their own sins, even when they've committed them. It's human nature. You have it. You cannot figure out which moon is going to cover them sins. Tell me, what moon covers that? Does any moon cover that? What moon replaces the corrupt heart that you can't even know? You know, I say this a lot. Sometimes I don't like saying it because I don't want people to look at me different, but sometimes I am minding my own business. I might be working, I might be walking, and just an evil thought that's out of character comes into my mind. And I'm like, where does that, I have no desire to do that. That's not even like me. But what happens when the thoughts that are you're more easily influenced by comes into your mind? Okay, Passover and unleavened bread. That's what we're talking about, right? In Luke 21, in verse 31, we're talking about how we can be deceived by the enemy and how our own hearts are deceitful, right? So, we've had the Lord's Supper. So what is the Lord's Supper, the Passover season, really like? Well, the followers of God were arguing amongst each other about who's going to be the greatest. Judas Iscariot had Satan enter him and was ready to trade away our Messiah for some silver. And then we break into the story. In verse 31, Simon, Simon, Satan has asked to sift you as wheat, all of you as wheat. But I have prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail, and when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. But he replied in verse 33, Luke 22, Lord, I am ready to go with you to prison and to death. So Peter understood. He knew what time it was, or did he really? See, Jesus answered, I tell you, Peter, before the rooster crows today, you will deny three times that you know me. You know, people pick on Peter, right? But I think next to John, he was probably the realest disciple there was, 100%. When he said, I am ready to go to prison or death with you, he believed that. He meant that. He was 100% sincere. Remember when I say sometimes the truth and the facts are not necessarily the same? I don't think Peter was lying when he said that, and I'll show you why. So we go down to verse 39, and it says, Jesus went out as usual on the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, pray that you will not fall into temptation. He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them and knelt down and prayed. Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will but yours be done. An angel from heaven appeared and strengthened him. Being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. Then he arose from prayer and went back to his disciples, and he found them asleep, exhausted from sorrow. Why are you sleeping? He asked them. Get up and pray so you do not fall into temptation. While he was still speaking, a crowd came up, and the man called Judas, one of the 12, leading them. He approached Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus asked him, Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss? When Jesus followers saw what was about to happen. They said, "Lord, should we strike with our swords?" And one of them struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his right ear. Now that was Peter. See, here's the thing that I don't think we realize. The disciples were ready to fight. I don't think we talk about that enough, right? So this is an illustration. I want you to imagine you have a sword in your hand, right? And someone is standing in front of you and you're trying to cut off their ear. That's not realistic, right? Or someone is going to cut off your ear. Are you going to stay still? No, he was aiming for his head. He doubts he got an ear. Yes, it's speculation, but I think that's pretty safe speculation. Peter wasn't aiming to cut off his ear. He was going for headshots. The disciples were ready to fight. Verse 49, when the followers of Jesus saw what was going on, what was going to happen, they said, "Lord, should we strike with our swords?" Now, like I said, Peter, a real one, he didn't even wait. "Oh, you're going to touch him?" "No, you're not going to touch, not while I'm here." Right? I grew up in Detroit. That's how it works, right? If your friend gets into a fight, that means you get into a fight too. Like if you don't get into the fight and you run away, you better not come back. Find new friends. So they were down to fight, but here's the problem. They were fighting the wrong battle. Much like the church, fighting the wrong battle. They were supposed to be on their knees praying with him. That was the fight. So again, we want to make Jesus in our own image. We want to fight the way we want to fight, but there's a way he's telling us to fight. We want to put certain things, we want to give certain things higher priority when he's saying, no, 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 this is how you build it. And we know later, Peter disowns Jesus. Because guess what? Peter doesn't know yet how to fight the way Jesus wants him to fight. Jesus is like, okay, if I can't use my sword, what am I going to do? Right? We build these churches with all these rules and regulations and not talk about Jesus. See, here's the thing, right? Proverbs. Proverbs 18:24. It says, "One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there's a friend that sticks closer than a brother." Can I tell you something? Every time I've read that in the past, I would always think about, you know what? I don't want unreliable friends. Right? That was like a warning. It's what my parents would tell me. You know what? You don't want unreliable friends. You don't want unreliable friends. The days of unleavened bread is telling us that you are the unreliable friend. You're Peter. We focus on the moons. We focus on the rules. We don't focus on Christ, like you said. Like the big one. So, we need to see these days as leaven in us. We need to see these days as we truly need Christ. We need to change our mindset. We need to go from bring her out and let's burn her to death to saying, she's more righteous than me. We need to go from surely as the man who did this, he must die, to saying, you know what? I have sinned against the Lord. See, the two passages I read you in the Old Testament, the story of Judah and the story of David. Why would God put those in the Bible? See, in Genesis 8, verse 22, the world had gotten so evil that God looked at it and said, wow, did I really make man? It got so bad, he said, you know what? Every thought was continually evil. Now, we got to start over. But guess what? I still have evil thoughts pop into my mind. Thoughts that I know are evil. And then even my heart is so deceitful. And it's bad that you can sin and not even know it when it's grossly wrong. Maybe it's just me. How about that? It's not me. I do it. See, humanity is broken beyond repair. Our severest judgment and greatest kindness cannot alter our inclination to evil. There are no perfect humans available for God to carry out his plan except one. In fact, Romans 3 verse 10 says, no one is righteous, not even one. Do you ever have selective amnesia about that? I do sometimes. Do you ever forget that we are fundamentally bad and not good? We are more prone to wrong than right. That's a hard truth to swallow. You might not like hearing it, but let's go to our mother and father, okay? You have the whole garden. You can eat of every tree in the garden except one. Which one are you going to eat from? I have kids. You put them in a room with a bunch of toys, okay? And you put one precious, priceless heirloom over on the other side of the house in a room with a locked door and said, don't go in that room with the locked door, but you can stay in this room and you can play with your toys all day. I have 7 kids. I know what I'm talking about. Plus, I was a kid. It's our nature. So no one is righteous, not even one. That's why we need a Passover lamb. That's why we need to be unleavened. God has no worthy raw materials to work with. He doesn't have a perfect instrument in all of creation. And maybe that's why God made the Bible so wonderful. I like how Bibles.net put it when I was reading this. Okay, it says, continuing, God persevered, forbearing with our proclivity to sin, working out his plan to save us from it and from the punishment we deserve. I want you to think about something. Jesus Christ, our Passover lamb, came through that union of Judah and Tamar. He came through that union of David and Bathsheba. So both of those ugly stories where people are sinning so bad that they can't control it, our Messiah came directly through that. So he knows what we are. God persevered to bring the promised Messiah from the line of Abraham despite the sinfulness of people like Judah. The message today is God can turn the mess in your life into a message. Today is about Yeshua, our salvation, not just in an intellectual sense of what we need to do and don't do, but who we are to become. And most importantly, when we fall short, the grace of his perfection is what our faith is on. The hope that's found in him is what we build our church on. That's the rock that will never fail. That is the bread of life.